If you'd like to listen to our podcasts without ads, please consider becoming a member. In addition to no ads, members receive bonus content for virtually all of our shows, an invitation to join the DSR Slack community, access to our Discord community, enhanced show notes for select shows, and more. For this week only, get 50% off the first year or the first month of membership. Visit thedsrnetwork.com/buy and use code ECLIPSE to receive the discount. That's thedsrnetwork.com/buy and code ECLIPSE. Thank you very much for your support.
Hello and welcome to the DSR Daily. I'm David Rothkopf, one of your hosts, joined by your other host, Chris Cotmore. How are you doing, Chris?
Doing well, thanks.
Excellent. And Riley Fessler. How are you today, Riley?
Splendidly.
Excellent. Okay, Chris, where do we start?
Federal judges are ordering the early release of some January 6th defendants, including a man carrying a Confederate flag, and others who breached the Capitol security ahead of a Supreme Court hearing on the legality of the obstruction charge against them. The charge, stemming from efforts to impede Congress's 2020 election certification, has been widely used but is now under scrutiny. If the Supreme Court finds the charge unsound, those released might not return to prison. Holy shit.
Yeah, well, we've really responded to this well. You know, there was like a coup attempt. Hundreds of people stormed the Capitol, beat up cops, had the Congress cowering, you know, in little corners of the building. They were calling for their death. They got way closer to actually doing damage to these people than we knew. There were people elsewhere in the Capitol who didn't storm it, but who were part of the plot, who had loaded weapons and were ready to hit the streets. And so far, we've gotten a bunch of foot soldiers, and none of the big people who organized it or supported it, either in the White House or on Capitol Hill, or, you know, the fundraisers like Ginny Thomas. Has there been a massive effort behind this? Yes. Has that massive effort been effective in deterring those behind this from doing it again? Apparently not, because Trump and the people around him have all said things like, well, if this election doesn't go well, you know, there will be violence. There, you know, he's trying to keep his crowd wound up to do it again. And our legal system is not sending a message that if you organize a coup, you're going to get in trouble. So that's pretty fucked up. I say that in tribute to the Larry David Show, which is now behind us.
Sorry, can I just add one more point to promote the show that you did with Miles yesterday? Because I found it striking that at the beginning of that podcast, Miles said something to the effect of, David, I'm so happy to be with you, with one caveat. And essentially he said, I cannot believe we're still talking about Donald Trump. He is potentially the next president of the United States. Pretty sobering freaking statement. And I still can't believe January 6th happened. So
yeah, no, I agree with you on that. I very vividly, the thing that I remember the most was sitting in my office at the time in New York City, looking at the video, and being in kind of disbelief, thinking this was a kind of a surreal thing that I never seen before and hope never to see again. By the way, Chris is referring to Miles Taylor, the former chief of staff of the Department of Homeland Security during the Trump administration, who wrote a book called Blowback and has a new paperback edition, which looks at the revenge motive in Trump's reelection campaign as part of its updating. That's our podcast, our book podcast from yesterday. I encourage you to listen to it. It is pretty, pretty sobering. I also just got an email from our friend Greg Sargent, who does the Daily Blast, the podcast we do with the New Republic. And he takes a historical look at similarities between where we are and where Europe was in the 20s and 30s, particularly looking at the complacency and sometimes tacit acceptance of fascistic tactics from the business community. Real eye-opening. Admittedly, some of this is gut-wrenching, but better to open your eyes, have your gut wrenched, and then do something about it than live in denial and end up back where we were that day. Riley?
The United States has recently transferred thousands of infantry weapons and over 500,000 rounds of ammunition to Ukraine, which were originally seized from shipments intended for Houthi forces in Yemen by Iran. The military aid was delivered on April 4th and includes enough small arms to sufficiently equip a Ukrainian brigade. So not a lot, but it's at least something. The transfer is coming amidst a fresh wave of attempts by officials, including Defense Secretary Austin and British Foreign Minister David Cameron, as they attempt to convince MAGA Republicans of the necessity of Ukrainian aid. This strikes me as the equivalent of kind of looking through your couch cushions for coins in terms of Ukrainian aid. Obviously, it still needs the kind of big package, but it's at least something in the interim, I suppose.
Greg Sargent's podcast with Julia Ioffe yesterday was excellent and addressed the very point of Ukrainian aid, and she was really good. Just, again, pointing that out for people to go and take a listen.
Yeah, I think her view on this thing is a little bit negative in terms of what could happen with Ukraine if they got the aid that they want. But she's certainly been an interesting voice to listen to on all of this. I would say that, you know, the efforts to date to move the MAGA leadership in the House to actually let a vote take place on Ukraine aid have not been successful because right now Donald Trump thinks withholding that aid works for him politically. And Donald Trump doesn't care about Ukraine, and he doesn't care about foreign policy, and he doesn't care about the United States of America. He just cares about winning because it's existential. And I think somebody needs to try to make the case to Donald Trump that this is a bad political strategy, and that if you don't support Ukraine and Russia does have breakthroughs, you're not going to be able to blame this on Joe Biden. This is going to be on Donald Trump. It's going to be on Mike Johnson. And it is going to be a solid message right in the middle of a campaign that these guys cannot be trusted with our national security. Now, even if they do release the money, I believe you cannot trust them with our national security. But they will not change their stance unless they think it is politically in their interest to do so. And the best example of that is to watch the recent efforts to triangulate his stance on abortion from Trump, where he realizes that what's going on with abortion laws in the United States, and yesterday was a really bad day in that regard, is not good for them politically. And of course, what I mean by yesterday being a bad day is that the state of Arizona Supreme Court allowed them to sort of re-empower a law that is Civil War era that essentially blocks all abortion in that state. And every time somebody does that, and then they put abortion on the ballot, abortion rights, the fundamental rights of women to take care of their own health win, Republicans lose. And that's why Trump was sort of fluffering around trying to find a middle ground. He didn't, by the way. Did a lousy job of it. You know, every single thing they say and do is, how do we win in 2024 so that we can keep Donald Trump out of the slammer? Chris?
James and Jennifer Crumley, the parents of Michigan teenager Ethan Crumley, who killed four students at Oxford High School, were each sentenced to 10 to 15 years in prison. This marked the first time that parents were held accountable for their child's actions. In this case, and we reported on this when the verdict was read, and we got some listener feedback about it. But this case, I think, was a clear, you know, the evidence pointed to the fact that the parents were negligent, not recognizing the mental health signs, nor securing the arms in their home. However, you know, the parent side of me, you know, is a little torn, obviously, because holding parents responsible for their kids' actions, in this case, somebody who killed four people, is sort of a difficult pill to swallow. And while I do not think this is precedent setting, I do think it will bring more, you know, charges or more cases of parents, whether proven or not. I just think it opens the door for more of these cases, for parents to be charged for negligence.
I couldn't have a more different opinion than you. I think it's a great case. My reaction to them getting put in the slammer is bye-bye. 10 to 15 years for each of them. They knew their kid was troubled. They left guns around. If you listen to the testimony of any of the parents of those killed by this guy yesterday, it would have broken your heart. Not only should parents be liable for these cases where kids have guns fall into their hands, frankly, we need to strengthen all of our gun laws in America. There is no reason why anybody should have a gun at home, period. They don't in other countries. They shouldn't in this country. You know, if you're saying, well, you need it for hunting or you need it for protection, people don't tend to, nobody needs to go hunting now, and it's a cruel and abusive tactic. And in terms of protection, more people lose their lives due to our gun laws than have their lives saved by a long, 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 long majority. Not the place to have this debate, although we should probably debate it some other podcast. 90% of Americans support more strict gun laws. There's a reason for that. We're insane as a country that has more guns than people. Got to stop. Riley.
Federal authorities are investigating Boeing following claims by a whistleblower, Sam Salapour, who was a company engineer. And he alleges that manufacturing shortcuts taken on the 777 and 787 Dreamliner jets could lead to catastrophic failures as the aircraft age. Salapour filed a complaint with the Federal Aviation Administration in January and alleges that these practices could significantly shorten the lifespan of the planes. Boeing has refuted the allegations, asserting their confidence in the safety and durability of the aircraft involved, which seems to fly in the face of the numerous recent reports of pieces of the aircraft falling off mid-flight. The FAA is reinforcing the importance of voluntary reporting in aviation safety and has begun an investigation, which will also be addressed in an upcoming Senate subcommittee hearing. I'm not afraid of flying, but I grow increasingly fearful of Boeing jets, and I do not want a piece of my plane falling off while I'm in it.
Yeah, well, that's as a former pilot, I have to tell you, it's a good instinct. You don't want pieces of your plane falling off. You would think this could trigger a golden age of ocean liners again, but of course we know ocean liners are big, giant Petri dishes where you're going to end up getting, you know, COVID or some other horrible disease. There is a guy who's rowing his way around the world. That may be a solution to avoid these kind of problems. But here's the issue that really underlies all of this. There was a massive, massive management failure combined with a massive, massive regulatory failure that took America's most important exporting company, Boeing, one of the most respected names that there is anywhere, and essentially compromised it so that it could increase its profits. And so far, the penalties that have been suffered by Boeing management for the errors that created these problems and the problems that occurred, for example, in their MAX aircraft that led to two very high casualty events. You know, they have not suffered legal consequences for it. When the management of a company that makes products like this produces a product that leads to the deaths of people, they need to go to jail. And when people who run companies like this destroy a brand, they need to be kicked out by the boards of those companies and not be given golden parachutes, or as was the case of the current CEO of Boeing, who's just stepped down, you know, do so in a way that's voluntary and where he says, yeah, I think I'll leave at the end of the year. It's just crazy. And it's, Boeing was such a great brand, such a great company. It's really kind of astonishing and heartbreaking to watch. Chris.
President Biden and Japanese Prime Minister Fumio Kishida are emphasizing their nation's strong partnership with a state visit, focusing on joint defense efforts and deterring China's assertiveness. This visit includes a series of meetings and events in Washington, showcasing about 70 defense cooperation agreements, joint military and defense equipment development, a lunar space mission, and AI research projects. Kishida's U.S. trip, which also features an address to Congress and a trilateral summit with Philippines President Ferdinand Marcos Jr., aims to reinforce Japan as a full global partner of the United States and counter China's attempts to isolate Japan and the Philippines.
The meeting between the Japanese, the Philippines, and the United States to create a new kind of trilateral alliance is really strategically significant, particularly given the Chinese current efforts to bully the Philippines regarding who controls what waters in the South China Sea, and is part of a really extraordinary series of alliance building efforts by the Biden administration in the Indo-Pacific region, including the elevation of the Quad, which brings together the U.S., Australia, India, and Japan, the creation of AUKUS, which brings creates an alliance that brings the U.S., Australia, and the U.K. together, the creation of the once unthinkable close cooperation between Japan, Korea, and the United States, etc. And that is why this trip has been given the high profile that it is. Very few state visits take place these days. And it should. It is about counterbalancing China in a concrete way. And I think the other thing that one should note is that it comes at, you know, roughly the same time as a trip this week by Janet Yellen to China, which shows that this administration understands the balance that's needed in this relationship. We have to cooperate where we can cooperate. We have to show defensive strength where we need to show defensive strength. They're doing both of those things. They've struck a good balance. It's a major achievement because of the extent of these alliances. Kind of progress you will not get from a U.S. administration like one that might be run by Trump that doesn't believe in alliances. In any event, we've got more coming for you today, including the Mothership podcast, our main podcast, which is going to look at some of the most important breaking international stories that are coming down the pike. And of course, there were all the other podcasts that were mentioned by Chris and me that you ought to listen to. And we've got some of those coming each and every day. So listen to them. And if you've got thoughts on them, reach out to us via any of the various means that are available, because we'd love to hear your thinking. Until then, thanks very much, Chris and Riley and everybody for listening. Bye-bye.